If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
I got Rod Pyle here from Ad Astra Magazine talking about Polaris Dawn. You recognize that, Rod?
It sounded like a spaghetti western, but I don't think it is.
No, that is a combination of Sarah Gillis, who's one of the crew members on Polaris Dawn, playing violin in Polaris Dawn at the same time as a full orchestra on Earth performs. And that's it. That's what the result of it is. That's a John Williams composition. I saw that today, and I'm like, this is incredible. They've got a picture.
I'm cowering in shame because I didn't listen.
Well, what do you know about that?
Because I was too busy listening to the auto-tune song about they're eating your pets. You know,
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But it was really amazing because she's up there, obviously, and she's an accomplished violinist, I guess. And they have the orchestra in a studio here on Earth, and her image is, you know, the video of her is up on a big screen, and they all play together. I can't believe how the quality of the sound to begin with, let alone I can't believe the accomplishment. How would that work? Isn't there a delay?
This is a little bit like during the pandemic when you get like 6 or 10 people on to sing or play different instruments because, you know, people are trying to find a way to be creative together, and you just have to account for that delay. And it's very short. I mean, it's not that far up. It's a couple hundred miles, although I think they did that at their lower altitude. So the delay is really minimal, but yeah, it's still something you got to worry about. What gets me is the fact that she can play weightless. You know, because it's not like it doesn't introduce any specific issues that I can think of, but she's certainly never done it before, right?
So, I would think not.
That's a good
point. The next thing you know, you're floating with this violin in your hand.
Well, she's not floating. I mean, I didn't think about the weightless aspect, but I'm guessing that she's got a seatbelt on and is sitting on a chair because she's not floating when she's doing this. You can see the video of it.
I saw it look like she might have had her feet in restraints or something. But, there's all kinds of ways to anchor yourself in the capsule.
Like she's full turning over and over and over while she's playing the violin.
I wonder how that feels. I play a stringed instrument. I just wonder how that would feel to have no resistance against your instrument. And like,
oh, that's true.
Yeah,
no,
that
that's
would,
very
that's
true.
That's thought-provoking.
Yeah.
Sorry to chime in. I just thought
so
that
much
was interesting.
Better than a cello, right? Because at least with a violin, you tuck it under your chin, but with a cello, you know, your end pin is just floating and you'd be all over the place.
Yeah.
Interesting concept right there.
I think she should have taken up a trumpet.
That would have been awesome. Just
imagine that in 330 cubic feet. space capsule.
They said that the article I was reading and the things I saw on YouTube, there's a recording of Star Wars theme. But due to copyright, you can watch the video of it, but there's no sound. But these others that are also John Williams compositions, which I just played you, and we're going to play a bit of another one in a few minutes, apparently passed the copyright test. So tell us about this Polaris Dawn, because it seems to me like this thing went really, really well.
It did, and you know, in the same news cycle as the whole Starliner story, which you've already talked about, it's kind of yin and yang, right? It's like, okay, here's all the extra things that went wrong with one, with the one, but here's everything that went right with the other. So, you know, this is Jared Isaacman, private citizen, rich guy, buys his second flight from SpaceX, don't go to the space station, they're just doing this orbital thing. In this case, as you know, he upped the ante by going in the highest orbit, Earth orbit, ever maintained by a spacecraft. Only Apollo went higher by going to the moon, up to 870 miles. And, you know, it seems like it's more dangerous, but once you're up there, if something goes wrong, whether it's 180 miles or 900 miles, you know, you're kind of hosed either way. So it's like, well, okay, it's not that much more dangerous, but it feels more dangerous. However, they were up in the lower levels of the Van Allen belts, which are these high radiation zones that surround the Earth. So there's a little bit of exposure to radiation, but nothing that was going to be a problem for that short duration because they were only there for a matter of hours. And then, of course, there's a spacewalk, which is a big thing. Now, when I first heard that, I, of course, thought of Gemini 4 and Ed White floating out there on the end of a tether with a little hand maneuver unit and all that. This is what they call stand-up EVA, which is just opening the hatch, crawling out to about your waist level and looking around and then crawling back in. I think it was about 8 minutes each. So, you know, a little less than what we're used to with, you know, the 10-hour EVA they do on the space station to repair things. But these are private citizens, only one of which had been in space before, so that's still a pretty big deal. So, yeah, you know, there's all kinds of little records set. One of the ones I enjoyed is it was the most people ever in orbit at 19 with the Polaris Dawn crew, 4, and then a number of astronauts at the space station, including Butch and Sonny, who were there because Starliner came home without them,
right,
and 3 in the Chinese Tiangong space station. So that's a lot of people in orbit.
Yes, it is. So let me go back to this quote-unquote spacewalk. So I guess what I'm hearing from you is that it literally wasn't a total spacewalk. They just sort of stuck their head out of the capsule or the ship or whatever you want to call it. Is that what I'm getting from this?
Yeah, it's kind of like what they did in a number of the Gemini flights. There was that first full spacewalk where he went out and floated around.
Yeah.
They had trouble getting him back inside because the Gemini capsule was so small.
Right.
They did more spacewalks where they had worked out some of those problems. But a few of them were just what they called stand-up EVAs, where they opened the hatch and the astronaut would stand on the seat. So that's essentially what they did here. But, you know, for the first time in a very long time, you had to expose the whole spacecraft to a vacuum for the two people to go out.
Right.
Because there's no airlock. So we
hadn't
done that since Skylab. So, yeah. So it's a good test. And also, this is a test of SpaceX's new EVA suits, which nobody's built since the late 60s, early 70s.
Right, right.
At least, you know, to do that with. I mean, we have them for the ISS, but in terms of new EVA suits, you know, this is a new design by many decades. And apparently they pass the flying colors. And
that's what I heard, yeah.
This is another one of those things. They're harder to do than we think, you know.
Yeah. We're going to do more with Rod Pyle when we come back on 720 WGN. One of the Polaris Dawn crew members playing violin. Pretty impressive. Just awesome to look at, too, by the way. There are videos on YouTube if you want to check that out. Sort of caught me by surprise.
Well, you know, just a very short point. There was an interesting angle to this on the media side. There were a lot of people online that were very, very upset and incensed that there wasn't any video in the first day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of, you know, calmer minds weighed in and said, look, this is a private space flight. He can do whatever he wants.
That's right.
But they really, you know, they felt like it was a violation of humanity. And you know, we don't know for sure yet, but the suspicion is that, as many astronauts do, they suffer space sickness for 10 or 15 hours and were probably using the barf bags constantly. So they're kind of busy and it wasn't something you want to show on TV, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, the acrimony was shocking to me. I mean, I it kind of makes sense, I guess, for the man on the street. Like, hey, you know, we always see this stuff in NASA. Why aren't we seeing this? But it's his flight. He paid for that whole spacecraft. He gets whatever he wants.
Gets to do what he wants. Yeah. So SpaceX is going to do another private buy from SpaceX, the Fram 2 mission. What's that?
So the Fram, as you probably know, was the ship that that Edmondson took down when he beat Robert Scott to the South Pole. It was called the Fram.
Oh,
it was a very ingenious ship designed so when the ice closed in, it raised up instead of being crushed. So this is the Fram 2. It's being funded by a Chinese crypto guy named, his last name's Wang. I forget his first name. And it's going to be a 3 to 5 day mission. They're aiming for before the end of the year. Chun Wang, that's his name, cryptocurrency entrepreneur. And what makes, you know, this is kind of at first blush, it's like I've been there, done that thing because Jared Isaacman beat him to it. But in a first ever by any country, they are launching into a polar orbit. So instead of going up and riding into the equator and circling the Earth at a certain inclination near the equator, they're going to fly and do a sharp dog leg and go from pole to pole, which military satellites do all the time, because that way the Earth's turning under you and you can see the whole surface in a certain number of hours. But nobody's done it with a crew before. And when asked why he wanted to do that, he said something to the effect of, "I like cold places." Okay. Well, rich guy, you can say whatever you want, right?
So this is another example of a private flight, and the crew, is it similar to the other SpaceX flights? I mean, with people coughing up unbelievable amounts of money to get on board?
I think actually he's paying for them because these are friends he's made the last few years, he says. A polar explorer, a roboticist, and a filmmaker.
Mm.
And I have to tell you, having had a career in television before I got smart and started writing books for less money, I feel a little twinge of jealousy there. You know, I mean,
how about it?
She's younger, she's much better looking than I'll ever be or ever was, you know, so I get all that. But it's like, oh, shucks.
But yeah, but taking a film, I mean, I'm guessing she'll be filming. I mean, please.
I hope so.
I mean, why would you miss an opportunity like that? You know?
Well, I'm going to have her on the podcast at some point, so we'll find out more about it. She said, look, I don't think I'll be able to do this before the mission because we're heavy in training. And I said, okay, but you know, if you open up, let me know, and otherwise we'll do it afterwards. But it'd be cool to get her take on all that because, you know, back in the shuttle program before the Challenger blew up, they had a sub-program where they said, look, let's take up artists and poets and writers and, you know, creative thinkers and all that.
Yes,
they were going to do this sort of citizen's angle to it.
Right.
And then, of course, Krista McAuliffe was lost in the Challenger, and that was the end of that. Just professional astronauts after that. But it's a cool idea.
Sort of a Renaissance crew representing the arts and the humanities. Is that what we're getting after here? Who would be on that flight?
So.
Yeah.
And what it says to me, John, is that they're just a little too highbrow for you and me.
Indeed.
That's why we're going to... Sorry, I kid. They're only too highbrow for me.
What are you talking about? No radio people? What's the matter with these folks? Come on. Don't you like the rock and roll? Come on.
Well, but wouldn't that be cool to do... You know, to have a professional radio person up there doing a blow-by-blow every few hours, that would be really cool.
Hey, yeah, hey, absolutely. You know,
you ready?
If I could possibly pass the physical, you bet. But I got a feeling they're going to be a hold at their young man, or young man. Hold at their Landecker. We got a few physical
problems.
Yeah, hey, Grandpa, no. I think that's what it's going to be.
I think for me, they'd say, you know, Rod, we'd love to take you, but we have to be able to get the suit zipped up, and we have a problem. Call your midsection, and you're going to stay
suck
on
in your gut.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I could suck it that far anymore.
You know, the thing that impresses me about this, and I think I've said it before, is that, you know, we have NASA. And they're over there doing whatever they're doing, and SpaceX is just boing, 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 boing. I mean, in the timeline of going to outer space, it seems like they're launching stuff right and left.
Yeah, and they're doing it at a price, and they're doing it reliably, and then you see, you know, we sort of get used to that, and then we see the struggle Boeing's having with Starliner, and we're reminded how hard this really is. Now, the big picture... You know, statistically, someday there's going to be an accident. There'll probably be the loss of life.
Well, yes, indeed.
It might be SpaceX. It might be somebody else. But it's still safer and more frequent than it's ever been. It's way safer than the shuttle. It's a fraction of the cost. So you're right. It's just this amazing. It's almost like you've got this express line running up and down.
Yes, right.
And the Falcon 9 launches. You know, any given week, I can go out off the back of my boat and stare to the west, and I'll see a Falcon 9 going up.
That makes
amazing. Happen once or twice a year.
Have you got time for a question?
Yes, we do. Yes, we see you.
All right, Rod, here goes. At this point, considering all the stuff that's happening at Boeing, might they end up dropping out of space altogether?
That's a really good question. It's one that us media guys have been asking each other and anybody we can find. So the guesses are, one, they fly out the contract, which is four more flights, maybe five if they do one more at their own expense, and then that's it. So the question then is, can they make that mark before the space station's decommissioned 2030, or two, they sell off the program to somebody else and say, we're done with it, here, Lockheed Martin, go forth, you have our blessing, give us some money, or three, they just shut it down. I don't think they'll just shut it down, but they're about, at this point, about $1.7 billion upside down in it.
Woof.
And the shareholders are getting grumpy, and now the machinists are on strike. So
yeah, that's really not helping matters either. Plus, you've got all the airlines that are waiting still for planes that are, what, 2 years or 3 years now behind?
Yeah.
Take Amtrak.
Oh, God.
They can only go so far. You do know this, right? Okay.
I do know that. Rod, thanks for coming on. I look forward to talking to you again in the future. Rod is the executive brain power over at Ad Astra Magazine. If you need any Astra added to your life, he's the man to see or call or get in contact. You know what I'm saying.